Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Monday. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Joined by Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach at Bucknell. They've won four in a row, including a big win against BU. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be on, Steve. Thank you.
Hey, Dave, you've worked really hard and have stayed with your principles, especially playing a lot of people. Your bench came up big yesterday. Did the principles of playing some of those guys early there yesterday?
Yeah, you know what? Our bench came up huge. You know, down the stretch, we had four guys off the bench along with Cameron Ayers on the floor for the last, 10 or 11 minutes. And they did a great job. You know, we had two freshmen that played all the way down the stretch. And, you know, it's just been a big adjustment for those guys, John Asnero and DJ McClay, and they're now ready to contribute. We had a guy, Corey Starkey, who didn't play much early on as we were playing more of a four-guard alignment, and we went back to playing a little bit bigger, and he's done a phenomenal job for us. And there's a kid who kind of waited his turn for 2.5 years, and when he had the opportunity, he was ready. So that was great. And we've gotten back to playing better defensively and rebounding the ball better.
That was going to be my next question, because you and I both know that Army has guys that can score. Getting this four-game winning streak, that's the top-out number, 61 points. Everything else has been in the 50s. Has your defense allowed you to control tone and tempo?
Yeah, you know, we've been better. And part of it is that, you know, one of the problems in our league is a lot of teams play with four guards. And so there's always a challenge, you know, to make them adjust to us more than we have to adjust to them. And I think our front court guys have done a good job of scoring inside, offensive rebounding. I think we're like plus 55 or plus 60 on the glass over the last four games. And so it's made other teams adjust to us. You know, that's always a challenge. And I think defensively, we've been better. You know, it's taken a while to kind of stabilize some of our defensive principles, but we've certainly been better over the last four games.
Every team takes on a personality. Sometimes it takes a while for that personality to develop. What's the personality of your team?
Well, at least in the last four games, is grit and toughness. And you wouldn't have said that five games ago. You know, and we got out tough at Holy Cross. We kind of let missing shots affect our energy on the defensive end. And we had a little come to Jesus meeting. But, you know, this is how we're going to be. And if we lose, we lose. But we're going down, we're fighting, and we're going to put a grit and toughness. And we've certainly done that over the last four games. Now, I've been around long enough to know that four games is not a season make, you know, so we have to continue to embrace that. But last night we struggled to score for the longest period of time, but so did Boston University. And then we got offensive rebounds and tough finish moves in the paint, and then we're able to break the game open. But we stood the test of time with our defensive energy and our toughness.
Right now you're 9-7, tied for fourth place in the Patriot. We know seeding's important. You have two games coming up this week to close the regular season. Lehigh, your home game on Wednesday night at Soica. Then American down at Bender coming up on Saturday. How important are these two games, not just to continue what you're doing, but also the positioning in the tournament?
Well, positioning in the tournament is huge, obviously, Steve. But you know what? I think we've made our run by not worrying about positioning in the tournament. We made a run worrying about the next defensive possession. You know, and so we're going to focus on that. And obviously, we just won on the road against the best team in the league. And we've lost at home against teams that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily say are the best teams in the league. So, you know, I think more we just want to continue to make the strides we're making. And then, you know, if we're playing as well as we can play, we can go win anywhere. And if we're not playing up to potential, we can lose to anybody at any location. So I think we're just going to continue to focus on just kind of trying to get a little bit better every day.
There's talent spread out all over the place. Everyone's made a big deal about the 85 scholarship limit in college football, how that spread out talent. Well, the 13 limit has spread out talent across the landscape as well, across the country. Because of that, you have a lot of possession games. How tough is it mentally and draining where you know virtually every night is a possession-by-possession-by-possession game?
It's exhausting. I mean, there's no question about it. The other night, Wednesday night, and I had driven my car down to Loyola because I'd gone recruiting on Tuesday, and after practice, and then met the team there, and we won on Cameron Ayers hit a three with 16 seconds to go to win. I felt like I'd been in a prize fight. I had to make one of my assistant coaches drive my car home so I could go on the bus. I'm like, I couldn't even function. And we've been in our share of those games. It's exhausting, but it's also exhilarating, and it just, you know, reaffirms for our guys it's one or two little things that make the difference. And it may be in the last possession of the game, but it's a possession in the first 4 minutes of the game that also has an impact. And our guys are starting to figure that out, at least at a higher level than they were earlier in the season.
Well, it's fun when you get on the bus and you can say you're exhausted and you won.
There's no question about it. That's a heck of a lot better than getting on the bus. You know, yesterday was a six-hour drive from Boston, and our bus driver did an unbelievable job to make it six, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But that's a long bus ride, so it was good that we were coming back after a win.
Yeah, no question. Your seniors will be playing their final regular season game at home. What's the senior class meant to you as the coach?
Well, you know, these guys have meant a lot. You know, they've obviously tied yesterday with the 14th win, so they're tied with last year's group as the winningest class in the history of Bucknell. So, you know, with another win, they can become the winningest class in the history of Bucknell. And, you know, they've had a challenging role because, you know, Cameron Ayers has obviously been a phenomenal player all 4 years of his years. The other guys have been, you know, role players on really good championship-level teams, and then adjusting to being more primary targets has been challenging for them. And I think, you know, to some degree, they play with the burden of expectations of kind of living up to last year's group. But through it all, they've been terrific. And yesterday, you know, we had two freshmen on the floor for 14, 15 minutes, and I meant two seniors weren't. In fact, three seniors weren't on the floor. And they were as exuberant and happy and encouraging their teammates. And they just embodied, you know, what we want our program to be all about.
Which then brings me to the follow-up question. Are you seeing some leadership starting to develop in the underclassmen that can set the tone later on in life?
Well, we are. It's interesting, you know. The first thing to lead is you got to be able to lead yourself, you know. And so... that in and of itself has been a little bit of a dynamic for our freshmen and sophomores to just get that level of consistency and their approach to the game. And they're making some progress there, but to be very candid with you, the leadership burden has been felt by Cameron Ayers, who's really done as well, if not better, a job of leading as anyone I've ever coached. Because that's maybe not necessarily in his personality to be real vocal. He's become real vocal. I've really challenged him to do that. You know, he doesn't have a lot of other guys helping him in that leadership part, so it's a lot on his shoulders on the court. And he's embraced and he's played great, and he's really led. And that's the fun part of coaching, watching a guy who was a terrific player when he got here become even better, become even more refined, and just grow so much as a person in terms of his leadership.
You're growing. Do you sense now you're teaching a little less, or is there still a burden for you to keep teaching every day?
You know what? I mean, even with our great teams, we're teaching every day. You know, but we do, we can't take our foot off the pedal at all with these guys yet. You know, we're growing, we're improving, we're getting better, but it hasn't quite stuck in terms of the self-generated, passion for doing everything right every single time that we had maybe with the last couple of teams. It's getting better. It's significantly better than it was, but we're still coaching and teaching at a little more basic level than maybe what we did in years past. But bottom line is, as long as we're continuing to get better and the guys are embracing it, I can say this. I'm about ready to go to practice now, and every day I walk up that practice floor, I had a good time because I've been around great.
That's good. That's really good. One final question, and then I'll let you get to that practice. What makes Lehigh a tough matchup?
Well, they've got a really dynamic guard, Mackie McKnight. They got a really good inside kid, a freshman, Tim Kempton. His dad obviously played in the NBA and played at Notre Dame. And they make decisions. You know, at the end of the day, it's about you have to make decisions when you're guarding teams. You have to decide, you try to cover Mackie McKnight alone off a ball screen. If you do, he can really hurt you. But if you rotate and you help too much, they space the floor at good shooters. And the same thing, you know, can you cover Kempton alone in the post? And at Lehigh, we couldn't cover Kempton alone in the post, and we couldn't cover McKnight alone off the ball screen. And then we had to get in the rotations, and their other kids hurt us. If you're able to play a team where you can say, hey, we can help off of that one particular individual, that makes your rotations a lot easier. There's not necessarily a guy like that on their floor. So, you know, every guy is going to have to kind of own his individual matchup at a little higher level than what we did a month ago.
Well, you look forward to practice every day. I look forward to talking to you every week. So I appreciate the time you gave us.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you next week, Steve.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Paulson, head basketball coach, Bucknell. We'll come back with more in a moment. Is there anything you want to say about Michaela Schifrin here?
No, I'm good, thanks.
You sure? I'm just giving you a little opportunity here.
I know you are, and I appreciate that.
I mean, because before she goes into the 3.5-year witness protection program,
IndyCar season starts in about a month. How's that?
Well, if you want, we can get her on the show in a month. I'd rather talk to her than talk about that.
There you go. See? Bright side to everything, isn't there?
Yeah. Right now, Roger's in the back office rolling his eyes here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ensuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
What did Michaela Schifrin do in the other three events?
She was only in two.
Oh, she lost?
She did not win in the Super G. That is correct.
Okay. Jadeveon Clowney ran a 4.53 today. All right, so.
You know, Fox took a little bit of a hit. They were kind of hoping for a primetime Daytona 500. They got it after 6.5 hours, and it really didn't become a big winner for them.
Well, rescheduled events usually aren't, or rain-delayed events are not, usually.
And they also had a big fail when people thought that Jimmy Johnson had won because they were running last year's race.
Right.
But you know what? Right. To defend Fox, and I watched this throughout the afternoon off and on, they kept scrolling on the bottom of the screen that, you know, it's in a rain delay. And then they had rain delay in the Fox logo in the upper right-hand corner. So if you couldn't figure that out on your own, that's your fault.
Hmm.
That's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
No, they did. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. All right.
But I will say this: sports did outlasted anything else on television last night. NBC and Fox both had between the two of them had about 20 million viewers, as opposed to maybe 11 million for the rest of the networks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anthony Barr ran 4.66. This is another guy to look for in the draft. He's a top five pick, outside guy, UCLA. Thought he was fabulous watching him work on the edge. Now the combine here is next month. Allen Robinson will try to better his time.
That's what they're calling Pro Day, right?
Yeah, it's Pro Day's combine. That's what it is. Yeah, I've been to it. It's interesting to watch. For about the first 10 or 15 minutes, you're like, okay, great. And then they'll try to convince them to run the 40 north-south in Holuba Hall. And and they'll then be convinced they have to run east-west. Do you want to know why?
Please tell me. I was pondering the question.
You don't want to run. You absolutely want to run north-south in Holuba Hall. You want to know why?
Why?
It's downhill. Holuba Hall is not level.
Huh. That's a little disturbing.
Despite what people think, it is not level. Okay. So when you see, how long is the field? 60 yards plus end zones. So it's 80 yards. Right? If you start on the Pagula Ice Arena side and you head toward the practice field, you're running downhill. It's not a tremendous slope, but it's down. But let me put it this way. If you were to actually level the building, I mean, make it level, the cement would come at least a quarter to a third up the door at University Drive on the practice field end of it. It's if they made it level. Thus, they will run the 40s going west to east, the width of the field. Okay. Just a little downhill. That's all. Not much. You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that.
Like, all the fun facts that you put out last week, which the best part was the intro that I forced you to do.
It was 2 weeks, anyway.
Yeah, but you didn't do the intro until the last week. That's when I got interested.
Yeah, well, that's your fault. They were really good fun facts. It's not my fault you were zoned out.
Oh, no. No, I thought my fun fact was great.
Which one?
On Friday when I said there's less than 48 hours to go.
Oh, less than 48 hours. Nice, man.
All right.
893 days to Rio.
Jim Boeheim coaches tonight. You almost felt like Boeheim was waiting in a calculated way to get that moment so he could do that.
That was not smart.
It was a spark because there was 10.4 seconds to go. I don't think he realized how much time he had left. But the best call to me on that play, Tony Green should have made a no call. He scored. I mean, he did lower his shoulder and bowl him over. The rules have changed in midseason. Everything outside on the perimeter or the open areas is being called the same way as it's been called all season. So there's been no difference there. It's what they have called around the basket. Seen more charges called and have announced more charges called in the last 3 weeks than I had seen in the season combined to that moment. They're lapsing back into the part that people don't want. The block charge thing's a joke. Oh, I'm just going to go and stand here. No. Get the heck out of the way. It's, play ball. They took points off the board on a play like that the other day. People want to see some points put up on the board and not some guy flopping to the ground.
But in the next segment after the news, I want to get your opinion on whether he should have done what he did.
Oh, no, but I know he did it. It was calculated. He never should have done that. You don't preach to your players, keep your poise, and then lose yours.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Awesome news, by the way. The New York Giants today.
Uh-huh.
Sure about this? Awarded a bronze medal for finishing third in the NFC East.
Jess. No.
You gotta admit that was a pretty good one.
It was okay. It wasn't terrible. I have to tell you this, though. I was texting back and forth after the basketball game with Shikalimi head coach Tim Ford, and he said, by the way, I missed the fun fact of what the gold medals were made of and how much. And I sent along the information, and I also found out the dollar value. The gold medals were worth about $600, silver medals about $370, and the bronze, which is mostly copper and zinc and tin, worth about $3.50.
Well, tax-wise, that's good, because in this country, you will be taxed for it.
Yeah, that's one thing I didn't know, but I did hear about during the Olympics. You get taxed on your medal?
I told you that in the 2012 games. You gotta start listening, Doug.
That was a long time ago.
That's 18 months. All right, you're wondering about Kyrie Fort, ran a 4.7 today. Flat, the former Nittany Lion, now out of Cal, ran a 4.7 flat in the 40. Jonathan Brown, the middle linebacker for Illinois, ran a 5.03. Not good. Max Bulla, who was suspended for the Rose Bowl, ran a 4. He did really well. He ran a 4.78. 4.66 for Anthony Barr. We told you that. Aaron Donald, the big defensive lineman for Pitt, really good looking player. He ran a 4.68 today. I mean, for a man his size, that is. I mean, he ran faster than Kyrie Fort. Rashid Hageman from Minnesota ran a 5.02. He's also a defensive lineman. He can play either end or tackle. James Morris, good linebacker at Iowa, 4.80. C.J. Mosley has not run yet. He's one I'm anxious to watch. Lewis Nix from Notre Dame ran a 5.42.
Actually,
he's
CJ,
a huge man. Good.
No, I was just going to say, actually, CJ Mosley is one of those that I'm really interested in because that is one of the guys the Steelers are looking at in the first round, I understand.
He is a heck of a player. I talked about him the 2 years I saw Ryan Shazier has not run yet either. I talked about him extensively, watching him at Alabama when he was a freshman backup, and then he played against Penn State that year because I mean they played him a lot, and then he played a ton when he came up here as a sophomore. You can just see the instincts and the quickness, but his ability to cover the pass, very impressive. He understood as a young player the proper depth of a drop and how he could disrupt things. I mean, something that a speed skating coach in the Netherlands would never know about.
That's true. He fits, though, the Steeler defense very well, I think.
What a dope. Spend all this time on football. It's like, hey, yo, dog, hey. 22 rating, okay? Go away. Here, go back to your oval.
I just think that's Mosley is a kind of a linebacker that would fit very well in the Steelers scheme.
Yeah, yeah. And take Kevin with you. Mosley would be great for the Steelers. All right, Jim Boeheim. I'm telling you, he was waiting for that moment.
Well, you know what? It looked a little bit scripted when he started the jacket thing. What the heck was that? Was he taking it off? Was he putting it on? I got a little confused.
Now that should have been a no call. And I also strongly feel that after the fight between Ross and Serena, Ohio State, Northwestern, that Penn State, Nebraska, Michigan State and Purdue paid the price on Thursday night. After that fight, there was 133 free throw attempts in the Big Ten in two games.
That's crazy.
On Thursday night. That's an overreaction. Look, you've got to call. Each game has its own personality. And I can't stand when I see an overreaction and not. These people have been in sports forever. What, because Northwestern and Ohio State had a fight the other night where they pushed, shoved, and a punch was thrown? You think out of nowhere that Nebraska and Penn State are going to sit there and go, hey, you know what? I think we'll fight. Of course not. And I've seen these overreactions for years where you just sit back and go, every kid is different.
Let it breathe.
And the block charge thing, they have worked, they had done a heck of a job in the non-conference season of cleaning it up and making it better. And now they're reverting back to bad habits. I don't want to hear the debate. It's a block charge. Okay? Let them play. It's a no call. Okay, it's a no call. I don't care. Oh, Hood got to a spot. It's a no call. Play basketball. Okay, this isn't chess. Check. 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 No. Okay? CJ Fair came down the baseline, made the layup. Fine, move on. Get the ball in bounds. Move up the floor. Hood did a good job of anticipating. He was on one man and then moved to the baseline. Fine. Okay? It's a no call. There's no charge, no block, anything. It's a no call. Play on. I don't want really good games messed up by somebody overstepping their bounds. Now, as for Boeheim's reaction, I think it was calculated. I think he picked a moment, his first ever trip into Duke, and he was gonna fly off the deep end, and he did.
Yeah, but why would you pick that particular moment? I mean,
Well, it was a pretty big moment. Now, the problem is...
No, that's not what I mean.
10.4 seconds to go. That's why if he backs off, his team may still have a chance to win the game.
Right. That's
you're,
my...
You're only down two.
I mean, I've heard of coaches wanting to get a technical or whatever to... if they feel it does inspire their team or motivate their team. All right, I almost can buy that. But to get the double technical in that situation, where you're giving them four free shots and the ball... That just doesn't seem sensible to me. That seems like a mistake from the coach's standpoint, and the fact that if that were a player, that player probably wouldn't be starting next game.
Well, if it was a player, the player would be in deep trouble. Now, Brandon Taylor's not in deep trouble for the two tees he got the other night. He's in no trouble at all. Zero. He's not even in trouble for his own coaching staff. For the two technicals he got and getting tossed out of the game on Thursday night. Okay. He's not in any trouble at all, even from his own coaching staff, because you have to be there to understand the absurdity. It was absurd that he even got the second one. And the first one was a real to the edge. There have been some things that they've done this year that have been a little bit odd. Michigan State goaltending play. Okay, you know what the official's explanation was? I'm not going to name names on officials. I'm not going
to
get it. Okay.
No, but I like, you know what that.
Okay, he never touched the ball. The coaches sat back and went, "What? I mean, the ball was going up here and it ended up over there. Huh? What do you mean he didn't touch the ball?" He never touched the ball.
You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like I missed the call and I'm covering the best I can on the spur of the moment.
No, it tells me he didn't see it.
Well, that could very well be as well. You're right.
Okay, but then the makeup call in the second half, okay, was just as bad, where Penn State got a goaltending call and a free throw. That ball wasn't going in the basket at all. Adrian Payne just caught it. I mean, it wasn't even going to get to the basket. I was like, "What?" Dick and I are looking at each other like, "What the heck was that?" I mean, Penn State got the benefit of it, but it was horrible. Right? The other night, Patrick Chambers gets a technical foul. You want to know what egregious sin he committed to get a technical foul?
Oh, you told me this.
He was yelling at his own players because they missed a switch, that they missed a switch defensively and that they needed to straighten it out. And he got teed up because the official thought he was talking to him. I mean, this is how down the stretch, these guys are teetering a bit. The game doesn't need that. And that's I find that bothersome. They're warping back to the old block charge rule. No, don't do that. Okay? The game was on the right path. Don't do that. I mean, you want to know what precipitated the fight at Ohio State? What precipitated the fight at Ohio State was the Northwestern player. Is it Northwestern? Maybe in Ohio State. Two hands to the back and pushing underneath the basket. I have watched a lot of tapes because I'm getting ready for games, so I'll look at tapes. And it's just breakdown tapes, okay? It's not. I don't have to watch full games because I'll watch full games, but then I'll watch the breakdown tapes. Do you know how often I see guys on the knee taking two hands and shoving a guy out of the way to get a rebound? A lot.
I was going to say at least five times a game.
A lot. And so they do that. And the other night, the Penn State-Nebraska game, as soon as it happened in that game, it got called right away. It was against Penn State, and there's no question Penn State pushed. And it was the right call to make.
We're going to have tickets, by the way, to give away here for the Thursday night Penn State-Ohio State game. Ohio State's really righted the ship. They're on a roll now. Made a little change in the starting lineup, took Shannon Scott, dropped him out of the lineup, put Sam Thompson in as a starter, moved Lenzell Smith back to a guard. It's balanced their team because Shannon Scott and Aaron Kraft are too similar in the, to play in the same backcourt together for a long period of time. And I think it's really helped them a lot. Their games are too much alike. And we'll have tickets for that to give away later. All they have to do is tell us what Mark Lawrence's hat size is. What?
Great, now we're going to have calls tomorrow morning going, what's Mark's hat size?
Fine.
I don't know. I don't want to know.
If I were you, I'd measure.
I'll pass, thanks.
Fine. We received a note here, an email. When is Michaela Schifrin going to be on the show?
Oh, come on, you did not.
Yeah, I got one right here. They said you can make it happen. You're the wizard.
I probably could. The timing doesn't work right now.
Why? I thought she was an enduring star that was going to be in front of us for the next 4 years.
Well, we just have to wait right now for everybody else that wants a little bit of time.
Oh, okay. So in other words, Pian Chang's the next time.
By the way, we all know how to now pronounce Pyeongchang thanks to the Olympics. So, you know, they got that going for him.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I also know how to pronounce Vancouver and Salt Lake City and Denver. All right, which is where the Olympics should be. All right, we'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, fabulous.
It was my tribute to Harold Ramis.
I know, who passed away today at the age of 69. He was telling me during the break he's going to work hard to get Missy Franklin on the show.
Yeah, we'll do that before the summer games.
Remind him, everybody, who she is.
Missy Franklin was the high school senior who won several gold medals in the pool in London.
Oh, good. There we go. The Jajavian Clowney analysis. Here are the weaknesses. Okay? Thin build in the lower body. Down-to-down effort lacks consistency. I guess they noticed.
The fact that he takes plays off? Is that what you're alluding to there?
Oh, he sure does. I mean, what he needs to do is he has to learn how to be a pro. I mean, simple as that. Because if you take off downs in this league, they will take you down. Now, what he does a great job is, obviously, he's an athletic freak. Explosive power. I mean, really, his speed for his size is a rarity, and that's what today's 4.53 tells everybody. He does understand how to play with leverage. You watch him. He knows how to play with leverage, and he also knows how to use his hands. And also, if he's not on top of you because of his wingspan, he can disrupt pass plays. All right? He's got all of that. But he's also not mature. And that's something that he needs to understand what it means to be a professional in any way, shape, or form. Because with his size and with his speed, I'm talking about length. Because, I mean, obviously at 266, he could be a little, you know, maybe a little more muscle. But he should be disruptive on the field 6 out of every 10 plays that he's out there. And you watch him in South Carolina this year, and he probably was disruptive on 1 out of every 10 plays. Now, 2 years ago when he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, when he was a sophomore, he was disruptive on 5-6 plays a game. But this season, 1 to 2 plays a game, he was disruptive. I mean, out of 10.
You know, I mean, and the one thing that he's never shown leadership ability. He's always been a follower. He seems to, and he's got to make sure he's not following the wrong people. But he has a lot of things going for him.
Steve, I posted
when you're that size.
Steve, I posted this on stevejonesshow.com, which is the latest rules adjustment, we'll call it, for Major League Baseball with the new home plate collision rule. And before we wrap up, I want to get your thoughts on the change in the rule that has now been officially passed prohibiting the collisions at home plate.
Well, okay, so are you going to prohibit them at second base?
See, I have the same questions that you do there.
I mean,
why is it just at home plate?
I mean, at second base, a shortstop or a second baseman has to jump up all the time and get out of the way when somebody barrels in. You have every bit the right to a straight line shot at home plate, and if a guy's in front of it, okay.
But if the catcher now has the ball, the catcher will be allowed to block the plate now, and you can't do anything about it to get by him. You have to be acrobatic to get by him now. My thought was, and I don't know how you do this, Steve, but my thought was that if you're going to allow, or if you're going to not allow the runners to run into the catcher, which I understand the point and the reason for it, but if you're not going to allow that, then the catcher should have to allow some portion of the plate to be open and not be able to stand in front of it with the ball.
Right. Well, I mean, that, you know, look, these guys have hook slides, head first hand slides, things like that, where they can slide out and get to a spot. You still have room to make a play like that, because some of these guys who are really good base runners have the ability to do that. I'm just glad they're going to be using instant replay. We're going to have Tim Neverett on later in the week, the Pirates play-by-play announcer. I'm going to ask him about the usage of replay. At least they're doing something now. Challenges and so forth. That'll be good.
Just pick up the pace of play, and I think you'll get more people interested in baseball again. Takes too long to watch a game.
As opposed to slalom?
Yeah, that only happens in about a minute and 30 seconds.
There's 30 competitors, dog.
Yeah, there was more than that.
And you can't just, in fact, you know what? You know, and I say this in all seriousness. When Mikayla Shiffrin run, did you see how few people were in the stands?
Yes, I did.
That was actually, I thought, no offense, I found that to be shocking.
And that was a night event, too.
Yeah. You know, Jadeveon Clowney ran a 4.5 3.40.
I've heard that somewhere.
Football.